Hello and welcome to the Cali Outdoorsman podcast. I'm your host, Tyler Morris, and today we're talking to Ricardo Holden. Ricardo, you want to say hi?
What up?
So, Ricardo, you're sponsored, right, by, how do you pronounce it? Is it Hobie Kayaks?
Hobie. Yeah, Hobie Kayaks.
So, he's a big-time kayak fisherman. And we were just talking right now, he primarily does saltwater fishing. But let's, we'll just start from the beginning. So like what got you into fishing, or when did you get into fishing?
Well, I grew up, we moved out to California when I was about 7 years old, and my uncle was a big time fisherman. And so, he's actually my second uncle. So that would be my mom's uncle. Anyways, okay. He was a big time fisherman. And right when we moved out to California, he started inviting us fishing. So we'd launch out of Gaviota because he's from Santa Maria. So we'd launch out of Gaviota and go fishing. And I was probably 7 years old the first time I really got into saltwater fishing.
Okay.
And I can remember the first fish I caught because it was, a decent-sized bonita. But to me, that was the biggest fish I would ever see. It was a monster.
Yeah.
I look back on those pictures and it was 26 inch bonita. But
that's a big bonita. That thing probably fought like crazy too.
Oh, yeah. And when you're 8 years old, that was definitely a monster fish.
So yeah.
I think that's what really got me into fishing. And, I went through a hiatus of, going through life and everything, and even abandoned fishing for some time, and really got back into it about 8 years ago, and got into kayak fishing about 7 years ago, and pretty much that has, progressed and changed my life in a major way, because now kayak fishing is such a big part of what I do every day.
Yeah, yeah. So where, you said you moved to California. Where did you move to California from?
Well, I was born in New Mexico, Albuquerque, New Mexico. And,
oh, okay.
I don't remember too much over there, but, once we moved out here, it was, I did fish in New Mexico. I got some pictures of me with my grandfather catching some trout.
Yeah.
But, it was a game changer coming out here to the coast.
To the ocean, yeah. Yeah, ocean fishing's a lot different than fishing in New Mexico, I'd imagine. I've never fished in New Mexico. That's probably, I've fished in a lot of, the western states, but I've never really spent much time in New Mexico, but, did you do any freshwater fishing when you came out here really, or you just kind of, whenever you get invited or something, like?
No, to be honest, I'm not really a freshwater fisherman at all. Once we moved over here to the coast, my mom ended up being a galley cook, and she worked for a few years as a galley cook in the summers. And so as a kid, she would drag me on the boat and I'd sit there and fish. And a lot of times I'd be the ringer on the boat.
Yeah.
But anyways, I'd fish and I'd scrub the boat on the way in and collect the cans, for some extra change. But, it was about 2 years of that. And really that's where I learned how to fish calico bass. And, it's still my favorite species of fish for.
The calico bass.
Back in the day, I would throw the scampi, the root beer scampi, and just throw that left and right, throw it. And it was a really effective method.
Yeah.
So I'm still fishing the same technique, just with different baits. The scampi is not as popular nowadays, but, I could still throw the scampi if I had a bag of them,
Yeah. 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 Some of the older techniques of fishing, especially I think in saltwater, freshwater too, but saltwater, I feel like a lot of the old techniques, it's like, they're so tried and true that you could spend as much money as you want, but this old stuff a lot of the time still works pretty well,
Yeah, the scampi has that float, so it'll really catch the current, and you can fish it in that kelp and let it catch that current and sort of drift into the kelp a little bit.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different technique than what I'm doing now, but it's the same theology. You're thinking about landing my bait in the right position and letting it drift into the right position,
Yeah. So when you first, when you first started getting back into fishing, you said it was about 8 years ago. So did you do a lot of were you going mainly on the charter boats back then, or private boats, or
Well, yeah, no, actually, my buddy Kevin, he was doing a lot of fishing, and so he started, you know, reminding me, like, hey, man, let's go do some fishing and stuff, and I was like, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
And so I went on a couple trips with him, and basically what dragged me back in the sport was went on the Mirage and the, went, you know, over biter, and I hadn't fished in years, and he's watching me tie my hooks up, and he's like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing, okay, you know, and he knew what he was doing. So anyways, dropped down early in the morning. I was the first one to catch a white sea bass.
Oh, nice.
30-pound white sea bass.
Oh, wow.
And after that, I mean, after I caught that fish, I didn't even want to fish anymore. I was like, I'm cool. That was so exciting, and I got all that thrill done in, like, 1 minute.
Oh, wow.
Maybe 2 minutes. 2 minutes, maybe. Three
yeah.
Minutes. But anyways, I got it all over, and I was just like, wow, this is so fun. And I really, that's what dragged me back into the sport. I hadn't fished in, like, probably 10 years before that. So my mom was really into fishing, and she was still into fishing a lot, you know, and she was the one that would sort of pull me back into fishing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just busy with being a dad, you know, growing up and doing my own thing.
Yeah.
I got back into the sport, and after that, it was just balls to the wall, man. I was just like, let's go fishing every time I could.
Yeah, yeah. So then, like, so what was, like, the first thing that got you into kayak fishing, like, from going on the boats?
Well, you know, I was watching videos, a lot of YouTube videos. Once I got back into fishing, I was like, well, I gotta, you know, get caught up on game. So yeah. I started watching YouTube videos and stuff, and I started watching the Jurassic Sport fishing videos. And,
okay.
And yeah, dude, they were just nailing, you know, white sea bass, big halibut, main cod, and it was close to home, so I was like, oh wow, these guys are catching it in the same place I grew up fishing, you know, Gaviota.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, I grew up fishing there. That's where, you know, my mom's uncle, or my second uncle, Uncle Marvin, a lot of people know him, actually. He was sort of a legend, actually, up there.
Oh, okay. But,
I mean, he was quite the fisherman. Anyways, so I watched their videos, and I was like, man, I gotta get into this. So I ended up looking on Craigslist, and I found a $300 kayak.
Yeah.
A $350 kayak, and you know, talked the wife into letting me do this, and she's like, I don't know, you're crazy. Why are you gonna go out there with that little plastic thing and risk your knife? And I was like, it's fine, you know, let's do it. And so I bought the kayak, and I started doing it, and I immediately knew that this was something I could do for a long time, and there was a lot of reward to it, you know?
Yeah.
So, also, when I got into the sport, you know, it was about, well, almost seven years ago to about this date, that's when, you know, the first set of El Ninos came in.
Yeah.
So, the fishing was really good right off the, you know, I mean, really good. My first year on that prowler, I mean, I bought the prowler in February, and I want to say in the summer, I was already catching yellowtail on it. So it was like, you know, I went from within a couple months of catching, you know, grass bass in the harbor to in the summer catching yellowtail at county line.
So yeah.
I mean, for me, I went from the basics to, you know, the advanced fishing within a very short period.
Yeah.
And so after that, I was like, I'm hooked. This is amazing, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure. So the first kayak that you got, it was like a regular with a paddle?
Yeah, it was a paddle kayak. It was an Ocean Prowler 13. Great kayak. I mean, to be honest, best $350 ever spent, to be honest.
Yeah, so, especially if it's something that gets you into it, you know, like an entry level or whatever you want to call it. But it started your passion for that. So yeah. When was it that you switched? Because now you do like the pedal ones, right? The Hobie ones are pedal.
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, all kayaks have their purpose. The Prowler was a great kayak, still is a great kayak. And now I ride a Hobie Outback, and it's a good kayak itself. It just has more bells and whistles. Pedal drive means that my hands are free. I can
get fish cast more. Yeah.
I can sit on a spot. I can sort of, like, you know, there's current out there.
Yeah.
I mean, you're out there in a kayak, and the kayak is basically getting pushed around by wind, current. So in order to stay on top of structure or maneuver around and make sure that I'm able to fish accurately, you need that drive, you know? So
yeah,
I want to say the first year into kayaking, kayak fishing.
Yeah.
I think it was a goal to get into a Hobie really quick. And that was because I saw my friends and they were just like out fishing me all the time. So I was like, I got to change.
Yeah. You felt like you were like a step behind because you had something that you had to pedal or paddle with all the time.
You paddle, you cast, you pull up your line, you paddle, you cast, you pull up your line.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, I've done a lot more freshwater fishing, and that, like, to me, that's like the difference between fishing in a bass boat versus fishing in like a little aluminum boat. I mean, like, you can have an aluminum boat that's a bass boat too, but like just the little rental boats, like the difference is basically what you're saying right now. Like, because like with bass fishing, it's a lot like freshwater bass. It's a lot of the times it's working the shorelines and like you don't have currents and stuff in the freshwater, but like you have, you know, you're trying to go along a shoreline and you're trying to, you know, hit different little spots and pockets. And with a motor, like a big motor, it's like you got to go and then stop and you drift. Or if you have a trolling motor, you can cruise along and be casting the entire time and hit all those spots. So like, I feel like that's like when I see guys on kayaks with the with paddles, I'm like, dude, that's gotta be horrible. Cause like you're having to like basically shut off your engine and grab your pole and cast real quick and fish the spot. And if it's, you know, like you said, if you got a strong current, you might only get one cast in and then have to paddle more. And then, you know, your buddies are sitting over there with the pedals and they're been able to stay in one spot and they can fish, you know, on one spot without having to move a whole bunch, you know? So yeah, I definitely see the advantage there. It's like, you know, you're dealing with, you know, more time with your line on the right spot, you know, like, but, you know, one of the things, so like I started with bass fishing and then, I fished a lot of different things when I was younger, but, like my big first passion was a lot more with like largemouth bass fishing in the lake. And then I didn't get into saltwater fishing until probably around like high school. And I started more with like sharks and bat rays and stuff. Those were like the bigger, I guess you'd say like the bigger game, but from shore, you know, like I did a lot of fishing on piers and jetties and beaches and stuff like that. And then I got into the ocean boats and stuff like that. And I've always really wanted to do the ocean kayaking. And the reason why was a lot of, because I feel like with like the style that you do with like your, like I watch all your posts and stuff. But your bass fishing, it seems a lot similar to like freshwater bass fishing, but like when you go on charter boats and stuff, you don't get to fish the spots like you would on like if you're fishing in the lake and bass fishing, like you're cruising around looking for structure or, you know, for different things. And I feel like with saltwater bass fishing, it's pretty similar in that way, which I could be wrong, but it seems like it would be similar. But you can't really, you know, you can't hit the spots and stuff on the big boats like you could if you were in a kayak or somewhere where you can actually cruise around and hit all the little spots. So it's always kind of been a draw for me. Like I've always kind of wanted to try that out. But my back, I've already talked to you about that before, but because of my back injury, I've had problems with the kayaks because of the way that they sit. Like I can't sit for that long. But but so I can
touch on that a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly what it's like. It is more of a strategic fishing. I like to fish for calico bass. That's like one of my favorite fish to fish for. And I fish for it all the time, which is obvious in my clothes.
Yeah.
What I like about it is that you do have to work a structure. You have to find the structure. You have to sort of be stealthy. You can't just like, just come up and hit it hard. You have to sort of like work it a little bit and find where the fish are at and then work the fish sort of back, you know, work them back like you would freshwater bass fishing.
Yeah.
It is very similar in a lot of ways. It's the same methods too. You know, you're finding the right lure for the water depth, and you're trying to get that lure on top of the current or on top of the drift, so that when you pull that lure across, that you're enticing the bass to bite. So it is a strategic way of fishing, and I think that's what draws me to it. And you know, the kayak aspect is definitely similar to the bass boat aspect, in the fact that you can put your boat in the right position, and you can sort of maintain a position, you know, with the pedals and the rudder, to keep yourself on top of the bass and to fish them.
Yeah.
And like anybody knows, once you hook up a big fish, the bite's over. You got to go find a new structure. Usually,
yeah,
it pretty much shakes the structure up. The rest of the fish are like shooken up, and that's it, you know? So you gotta go move and find something else. So it is strategic, and I think that's part of the draw for me to keep, you know, fishing calico bass.
Yeah.
I can go out, I mean, we every time I go out there and I go, dude, I'm gonna fish for halibut, and I put about 15 minutes into fishing for halibut, and then I change my mind and go after bass.
Yeah.
And I mean, I catch halibut here and there, but I mean, I know there's a lot of halibut in Wainimi, and if I really time in, I could do it. But it's just the fishing method isn't as entertaining or as enjoyable for like bass fishing, you know? I mean,
yeah. I think that there's probably like seasons too that the halibut fishing is like a lot better, but I feel like
they're biting right now.
I was gonna say, because I know like certain.
I lost a big one today, like a real.
Did you? I was gonna say I feel like that's kind of one of those things. Like to me, like at the lake, for example, like, you know, one of the things that I love about bass fishing at the lake is, in Southern California, we can fish bass all year round. There's not a season for bass fishing. There's seasons where it gets better and there's seasons where it's tougher, but they bite year round. Like they're always there. They're always wanting. And a lot of the times it changes your method that you have to fish, you know, like in the winter times, they're slower and stuff. So you got to do a lot more like, you know, like there's a lot more with your presentation and like you have to work harder basically, but to me, that's more of the challenge, you know, like if you get a good, but a lot of the times the ones in the winter are also the bigger bass too. So like you work harder, but there's a better payout, or you can just fish in the springtime and, you know, during spawn season. And it's like, they're like, you drop pretty much just about any lure in the water and they attack it, you know? So it's like, and I think that halibut fishing is just like a lot similar in the way that it's, you know, like it's just a lot more intense. Like there's a lot more times where it's really hard, you know, with halibut. But I think that there's like, from what I understand, there's some times of the year where it's like really easy, but a lot of the year it's really hard fishing. And I mean, I know guys that go out and they'll catch halibut almost every time they go out, but that's all they fish for. Like that's their thing, you know, like if, but like most other people, they're like, yeah, it's just kind of boring most of the year because you don't get bites and stuff as much. It's not very action packed, you know?
Yeah. The technique is boring, but the reward is definitely fruitful. So it's like a trade off where bass fishing, you know, you're throwing lures. So, you know, you're working spots. You're methodically thinking about like this structure, where halibut, you're just sort of drifting and just trying to cover a lot of sand and hoping that
something's alive down there.
You're right there, you know, because you really don't see them on the finder. I mean, you don't see halibut where you do bass. You know, you can go over a structure and you're like, oh, okay, there's some bass lined up right here.
Yeah.
Okay, I can work these, you know. And I mean, sometimes you can throw your lure down and you can watch it in the finder and you can watch a bass hit it on the finder, and you're like, wow, I just saw myself get hit.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, when they're hungry, that's what they do. So, and it's the same thing, you know. Right now, the bite's a little bit slower. You have to work a little bit harder, but they'll start spawning in probably another month, and the calico bass bite will really heat up, and it'll probably stretch to about, you know, June, July, and it'll be really strong. And then it starts to trickle off again and then get harder into the winter. So
yeah. Do they I'm still kind of like new with the different saltwater fishes. Do they have like a spawn season, like largemouth bass, dude, where it's like just in the springtime that they spawn, or do they spawn year round, or?
It's a summertime
spawn.
July, yeah, you can tell they're spawning because they get really orange cheeks. Okay. So when you start catching cackle bass and the cheeks are super orange, you know that tells you they're spawning. So in that period, I mean, they'll hit anything. You could drop anything down and they'll hit it. You know.
Really.
Yeah, they're super aggressive. They're protecting their eggs, of course. So.
Yeah. Now, like, for largemouth bass, like, a lot of bass guys, you know, they're pretty much, like, just catch and release. And I noticed that, like, a lot of guys that are into calico bass are similar in that way. Actually, I just found this out with largemouth bass. They're actually pretty good eating if you get the right sizes. So, like, I growing up, we always released bass. We never kept bass ever. And I've caught thousands of largemouth bass, never killed one. Like, if we killed one, it was like an accident, you know? But just recently, I was like, you know what? I've been doing a lot, like, with this, the Cali Outdoorsman thing. I've been doing a lot of, like, catching cooks, or, like, I'm hunting and cooking stuff. And it's like, I should try bass. So I finally did, it was like 2 months ago or something. We kept two, like, 2-pound largemouth bass, and they're really good eating. And I was like, well, that's another option. Like, I mean, I know how to catch bass. So, like, if I want to catch enough food for dinner, like, I don't think I would go out like I do rock fishing where I'd catch a bunch of them and freeze them. But, like, if I want to go catch some fish for dinner tonight or something, I could go get a couple bass, and they're really good eating. Do you feel like, is that similar, like, what you do with largemouth bass? Like, calico bass, do you do a lot of catch and release, or do you, like, selectively pick a few and just cook them, like, fresh? Or do you, like, stock them up too in the freezer, or how do you go about that? Like,
it's definitely selectively, because I mean, I'm not gonna lie and say that I don't eat cackle bass, because I do.
Yeah. They're good eating. I tried them before I tried largemouth bass, so I know they are good eating.
They're a really good fish.
Yeah.
Delicious. They are slow growing, so they're not considered the most sustainable fish, you know?
Yeah.
But my fishing method is sustainable. I'm going out there, and, like, literally today, I did. I kept two calico bass, and I kept a sculpin.
Yeah.
But if you look at it, like, that's super sustainable. I'm fishing twice a week. Maybe pulling five fish out of the ocean that are in the bass species a week. So, that's sustainable.
Well, and also your fisheries that you're fishing, like, that you're able to access are probably not really getting, they're not like the ones that charter boats are going to, where they're able to raid them, basically, because they can't, you know, like, they can't stop at a lot of the little fisheries that you're able to access with the kayak too, right?
So, where I'm fishing is it's a hard place to fish on boat because it's super shallow.
Yeah.
Strong current. So, I mean, motor boats have difficulty fishing there, but, I think in general, charter boats, they're trying to catch volume. So they're going to trade off, and they're going to go to spots where there's, you know, heavy kelp, heavy structure. They're going to look for rockfish probably, because rockfish are more abundant.
Yeah.
Whereas calico bass, it's a little bit tricky of a fishery. You know, you have to have a little bit of skill. You can't just put anybody out there and expect them to pull them. I mean, when they're biting, you can't. I mean, you could drop an anchovy on a dropper loop and catch cackle bass all day long.
Yeah.
When they're biting, but when they're finicky, you know, and in these months, you have to have some skill. You got to be able to cast, and you have to work baits back and bring them back. I'm not really concerned with where I fish, but I know that, you know, down in Malibu and stuff, the cackle bass fishing is really good. And the charter boats can really go down there and
slam.
Just really slam. I don't have really an opinion on, you know, killing them or not. I grew up eating them my entire life, so I'm not going to, you know,
knock somebody. Yeah.
Nobody else should eat them. Nobody else should eat them.
Yep.
But I do think that, you know, it is, you have to consider fishing and the sustainability. And if you think, I mean, I wouldn't persuade somebody to go out there and just kill a bunch of fish and then not really eat them or not do something appropriate with it, you know?
Yeah.
And I do like that they have a 5-fish limit for bass, because I think that otherwise, I mean, you could get on a hot bite. And I mean, there's days I've caught 30 bass. You know? I mean, really. And I wouldn't want to take 30 bass, but somebody else might. And I don't really think that's the cool thing to do. You know?
Yeah.
Nobody needs 30 bass.
Yeah.
So
if they do, then let them fish all week.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're gonna take 30 bass, dude.
Yeah, you better put in some time, man.
I mean, there's days. It was funny. I took my friend out the other day, and I go, "Dude, I'm gonna catch 20 fish today." And he goes, "No, you're not." And we started counting, and I stopped at like 18, and he was like, "Oh wow, you are." I was like, "I told you, man, it's not that hard, you know."
Yeah.
You can really, I mean, you can nail them when they're biting, and you can tell real early, like, "Oh, this is gonna be a good day."
Yeah. I had another question for you about. You were talking about like the 5-bass limit. What about when I first started getting into charter fishing, one of the very first times that we ever went fishing for bass was actually on the Speed Twin, and it was 13 people were on the boat. So it was a very light load on the Speed Twin, and we went down to Malibu and we're fishing right. I mean, they got the boat right up on the kelp. And so we were able to, like, we were fly lining anchovies and sardines out there on the, like, just right on the edge of the kelp. And it was pretty cool because, like, you've been on the Speed Twin and you have like a really high visibility because you're so high off the water. So it was cool because you didn't even really have to cast, but you just kind of swing it out there, and it's got such a far drop that it would get out pretty far from the boat, and you could see the bass, like the schools of calico bass coming up and just attacking baits and stuff. And it was really cool. But back then it was, the size limit was 12 inches, and then they moved it to 14 inches. And one of the things that I've noticed is, like, when I've gone out fishing more recently, being now it's 14 inches, it seems like probably, at least on the charter boats, it seems like probably 90% of the time they're all 13 to 12 inches. And so it's like pretty rare that you actually get one that's 14 inches. So like before, I used to actually get a couple calico bass whenever we'd go shallow water rock fishing or whatever, or bass fishing to bring home. And then now it's like maybe one or two. But like, have you noticed a big difference in like, or would you agree with that? Like, do you think that actually helps with the 14 inch?
I like the 14 inch. I mean, I think that 12-inch fish don't really provide enough meat to really justify
taking them out.
If you're going to go fishing, it goes back to sustainability. You want to make sure you're getting a fish that's at least, spawned a couple times before you take it. So I think the 14 inches is good. I usually don't keep them unless they're 15 or bigger. That's just a couple reasons. I don't want to take a 14 and a quarter, and then by the time I get on the beach, it shrunk a quarter of an inch, and I'm trying to explain to the DFG guy, like, no, it was 14 and a quarter a second ago, you know?
Yeah.
And then he's like, no, it's not. And you're like, I swear he dried out, you know?
Yeah.
Especially on the kayak, you know, because I mean, I have an ice bag, and I put the fish in the ice bag, but, you know, I have, one time I caught a sheephead. And I measured it right when I caught it, right?
Yeah.
And when I came in, it had lost an inch. And the only reason I noticed that was because I was scoring it for a tournament. So I was, when I first measured it, I was like, oh, yeah, it's 16-something inches. And then when I came in, it was only like 15 inches. And I was like, wow, it lost about an inch. So ever since then, I've been like, you know what? I'm not going to take one unless it's at least an inch over the limit. So
that way,
if it does shrink or lose its water weight,
you're not getting in trouble.
I don't have to even sweat it, you know?
Because
the DFG, they're not going to care about your story. Like, they're going to measure it the way they want to measure it.
Yeah.
You might tell them, like, bend the tail a little bit. They're like, no, I'm not bending the tail. It's like this. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't take my chances with that. I think the 14 inch with calico bass is definitely a fair size limit for them. I think that's I caught two legal ones today, three legal calcos, but one was like 14 and a quarter, and like I said, I don't keep them.
Yeah,
so I caught like three legal calcos today, and I caught a sculpin. I kept two calcos and a sculpin, and I could have kept fishing. I'm sure I would have caught, you know, three or four legal calcos throughout the day, but I didn't need them. You know, I caught three fish. It was good enough, and came in. But I have sort of changed my fishing method lately just because of the, the whole virus thing. I've been ever since then, I've been like, hey, I'm going to go fishing. I'm going to come in. Part of it is because I don't want people to view it as recreational. I want people to understand that, like,
you're catching food.
Yeah, there's more to it than just recreation. I mean, it is definitely recreation. I enjoy it very much. It's always going to be a sport and something I'm passionate about. But at the same time, it is something that I look at as like, okay, I'm providing protein and, again, a sustainable fishery. Like, I want to make sure that I can go there in a week from now, and if I need to get protein or whatever, I can go and get it, you know?
Yeah. So just a quick question regarding that. Like, so I know they closed all the beaches and the launch ramps. How were you able to launch?
Well, I don't know.
I was gonna say, was that a tricky deal?
It's not really tricky. I mean, Channel Islands is still an open waterway, so you can launch out of Channel Islands.
The harbor? So
the streets are closed and the parking are closed. So
you have to drop off.
You pretty much got to like unload and then park either at your friend's house or a place where you can
park. Cause like I've been reading a bunch of stuff about that, and they were saying how there's like, cause some people were saying like, oh yeah, like I went and talked to, you know, they had sheriffs at the beach or whatever. And like one guy was saying that he showed him, I can't remember what stature it was, but there was one thing, you know, like the one that says you're allowed to fish for food. And so then like the sheriff looked it up or whatever and was like, oh yeah, you're fine to go fishing for food, but you can't park here and you can't leave your car at any of these, you know, all these street parking and stuff is all closed. So if you can get here, like get dropped off or something, you're fine to go fish, but other than that, you're not allowed, you know, to be parked here or hanging out here in the parking lot or on the streets or anything like that. And so I wasn't sure, like, I haven't been down there to try fishing or anything, because that guy was surf fishing, so he's like literally on the beach. But I don't know, like, because they closed the beaches, I think it was last week sometime, wasn't it, in Ventura County? But they weren't really enforcing it, like they didn't have stuff closed off.
The harbor's sort of different. I don't know the whole political side of it, but I know that some of the harbor beaches are closed, and they're not closed. Like, you can't go to the beach. They're just closed from access, and you can't park there. They coned off the parking lots, and they've locked the bathrooms. So basically, that's their idea of closing it. You can still walk there, and you can still hang out on the beach. But I don't know how long that's gonna last. I'm a little concerned about that. I mean, from what I've heard, is the harbor doesn't really want to stop people from fishing, and they don't really want to stop people from boating. But if it becomes a problem where, you know, there's people congregating and there's large groups of people, I think that's when they're going to have to enforce it. And I think that's what I'm trying to avoid, is I don't want to make it look like, hey, we're hanging out. I want to look like, just, you know, hey, we're getting out. Fish. We're coming in and we're gone. We're not, you know, making this, it's less sport and more necessity.
Yeah.
So that way they don't look at it as being sport. Because the minute they look at it as being sport, they're going to be like, well, this isn't necessarily essential. This is a hobby, you know?
Yeah. I just saw signs for the harbor. I don't remember. I think it was either Ventura or Santa Barbara Harbor, but they had signs up that were saying, you know, that it's closed for all recreational fishing and boating.
Well, that's what it says at Channel Islands.
It's only commercial. Yeah.
And then the boat ramp, it says the same thing. Like, you can't launch out of the boat ramp in Channel Islands.
Yeah.
So,
I don't fully understand that one. Like, I mean, I totally understand they want people, like, you know, doing the social distancing and stuff, but, like, what if you had a boat, you know, like, and it was just, like, you, like, say you and your son have a boat, and you want to go out and go catch fish, like, how is that any different than a kayak, or, you know, or fishing from shore, you know? Like, I mean, I could see, like, the charter boats, or boats where it's, like, you have a group of 15 or more people going out, but, like, most private boaters that I know, it's like you go more with more than three or four people, it's a huge crowd, you know, like at least yeah. most of the private fishing boaters that I know, they don't like taking more than three people on their boat, you know, like four people is like, there's two people ain't fishing. They're just sitting there, you know? So like most of the time it's like, normally it's only one or two guys that are going out on private fishing boats. So like, I was kind of surprised that they did that. I don't know. I don't know if it's just more of a thing, like they don't want the traffic flow in the...
I think that's what it is. It's...
like a funnel.
Yeah, I mean, there's also other people that are obviously calling in, and they're saying, like, hey, you know,
yeah.
I didn't go to work this week, and these guys are out there boating and having fun.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's some of that going on.
Yeah.
I also think that, you know, when they assess the usage, they go, wow, you know, 30 cars parked here, as opposed to the other side of the harbor, they're like, oh, three or four cars parked here. So when they look at, like, let's decrease population, which is basically the, you know, social distancing is
yeah.
decreasing population, they go, well, 30 cars are here, you know, three people in each car, we got 90 people hanging out in, 300, 400 square foot area.
Yeah, that's too many people.
I mean, you know, the launch ramp isn't that big. I mean, it's more than 300, you know, 1,200 square feet or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but they're still looking at that and going, wow, you know, this many people are walking up and down this ramp, you know, consistently all day long, whereas some other place there's only a handful of people, you know?
Yeah. But my point is that I don't understand is go park in the Costco parking lot or the Winco parking lot. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, and that's the same thing. They're going to get food just like we would be going if we're going out fishing, you know, like, and I get the argument that it's sport, but like we said, I mean, there is a lot. I mean, most people that I know that do ocean fish eat fish. It's not like right. freshwater fishing. Like the guys at the lake fishing for bass, those guys never bring a bass back unless they're in a tournament typically. So like, that's literally just a sport. But like when you're talking ocean fishing, I don't even think I know of a single person that goes ocean fishing that doesn't bring at least one fish back. Like, typically you go out, you're going to bring back food. So like the fact that they're like categorizing, you know, recreational fishermen as non-essential is kind of, I feel like it's kind of an unfair deal, because personally, I think that like, if, you know, like even if me and you got together and we went out on a private boat and went and caught fish for our family for the week, I'd rather go do that. And I'd feel like I'd be safer than if I go into Costco to get groceries for the week, because there's thousands of people a day going through Costco, you know, like, I don't know if you've been over to Costco lately, but I tried going in there. I tried going in there, 'cause we normally go there for like all our paper products and like our, you know, toilet paper, paper towels, and paper plates and stuff like that. And then like there's a couple other things that we get too, but that's literally like the main reason why we have a Costco membership. And we only go like, you know, three or four times a year. We don't go like, you know, we don't even go, I think, once a month. But we're finally starting to run low, and I'm like, gosh dang it. I'm like, drive around the parking lot and I'll see the line going all the way around the building, and I'm like, nope. just keep on driving, man. I'm like, I'm not gonna be a part of this. But sorry, that was kind of like a little off topic about that, all that stuff, but it is kind of an on topic thing that's going on right now and yeah, everything. I mean,
there's some debate about whether or not it's, you know, essential, and
yeah,
you know, everybody's going to have their opinion. I think that it's a low risk exercise in the first place. So just the exercise benefit alone, in terms of kayak fishing or even boat fishing, I mean, the mental break that you get, the relaxation that you get
yeah.
from going out there is probably worth more than the food. It really is. Yeah. You know, obviously this is, you know, sort of stressful. You know, we're dealing with some situations that most people have never experienced. I've never experienced.
Yeah. Most people alive have never experienced it.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty gnarly. And I think having an escape is good for people. And I don't think it's harming anybody. And I think that that's really the most important thing, is that if you're going to get some mental relief and you're not harming anybody, then why should it be prohibited, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously other people might see differently, and everybody's entitled to their opinion, and hopefully we can get over this and get back to normal and go back to just having, you know, fishing for fun. Because it has changed the way I thought about fishing. Lately have been more like, okay, dude, let's just go out there, catch our fish, and come home. Let's not make it a sport, for a couple of reasons. I don't want people to interpret it like, oh, this dude's just out there having fun. Like,
yeah,
I am having fun, don't get me wrong, but in the same sense, like, I
want to catch some fish for dinner. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's going to be decided later whether or not it was the right thing to do, you know? I mean,
I personally think that, like, because I mean, I was watching a thing the other day about it, and they were saying how even people in rural situations where you're not, like, stacked as far as your housing goes, like, they were saying that, like, you know, the people that it's really affecting, the whole stay at home thing, or the people that that should be implying it more, is when you're in crowded cities or crowded areas. And it's, you know, a lot of it's because you're going to places like going to the grocery store or any stores, really. You know, you're going through places that have to be cleaned, you know, versus like if you're outdoors, like when we go fishing, there's not really a lot of things that we're going to touch that's going to be contaminated with a virus that's transferred through humans, because we're outdoors, we're touching sand, water, you know, your own personal boat or something like that, or your own fishing pole. It's like, those are not things that are going to transfer a virus, versus like, you walk to, like I said, like, I mean, even the, I feel like the grocery stores are seriously the thing that they need to start monitoring more, or doing something, because that's where people need to go. So they're going to keep going no matter what. Like, people are going to go to the grocery store, whether they're dying or not, because they need to eat. You know, and the sad part is for a lot of people, I think that this whole thing, like you were saying, how it's changed, you know, how you think about fishing and stuff, and how you've been acting about or going about your fishing. I think that hopefully it's changing a lot of people to think like, hey, maybe I should try to get my food from somewhere else, because look how dangerous it is to go to the grocery store. You know, yeah. I mean, like I do a lot of hunting, as you know, and I have like 2 freezers outside full of meat and fish. But so, like, to me, when they were like, oh my gosh, all the meat's sold out, like, there's nowhere, like, nowhere has any meat or anything, I'm like, okay, like, that's fine. I got a freezer full of meat. It doesn't affect me, you know? But like, there's a lot of people that, I mean, if you, like, all of a sudden all the restaurants are closing and stuff, it's like the only places that you can get food from now is pretty much like fast food, which nobody wants to live off of fast food. Or you had to either, you know, rush out and stockpile a bunch of food, or you had to have freezers full of, you know, like your proteins and stuff like that. Or like what you're doing, where you're going out and you're actually, you know, catching it on a regular basis. Like, that is kind of your grocery shopping, you know? And so I think that I'm hoping, at least, that it's kind of an awakening for a lot of people, as far as like showing people where our food's coming from and who has control of that, you know? Because me and you, like, if we go hunting or we go fishing, we have control of us getting our own protein, you know? But like, I mean, right now we're in a scary point where we're wondering, like, if the government can shut that down. But I mean, if it really came down to it, like, if we needed to eat, we would probably still do it, whether it's legal or not, you know, but we have the skills to go out and, you know what I mean? Like, provide for our family, versus a lot of other places, and more so in highly populated cities and stuff. It's like, where are they going to get their food? You know, like what happens when they stop getting deliveries at the grocery stores because they shut down, you know, all the shipments into the city? You know, where are they going to get their food? They don't know, like, they don't know how to get their food. Like, they don't know, they're not hunting and they're not fishing. So, like, I like I said, I think, hopefully, at least, there's a lot of people, it's, like, an eye-opening thing. And I know, like, I'm seeing it, because, you know, I live in Ojai, so, like, one of the ways that I see it is eggs, for example. Like, I'm sure, as you know, eggs there for a while, like, you couldn't get eggs anywhere. Like, everyone sold out of eggs. Because yeah. Everybody went and stockpiled. They were buying, you know, dozens and dozens of eggs. And we have chickens here at my house. Like, I have, I don't know, like 24 or 30 chickens or something like that. So we have quite a bit of chickens, and we normally sell eggs. And then, like, with all this thing going on, we've been selling eggs like crazy. But, like, we still have to, like, we have to kind of reserve some for ourselves, because we're, like, we have chickens for a reason, you know, like, for our own eggs. We normally just sell the excess, but everybody's, like, trying to buy up as much as possible. But I was at the at our local feed store, and the feed store was they normally get a bunch of chicks in this time of year, and they have waiting lists right now for chicks. When the chicks come in, they don't even have them at the store for like more than a day, because all these people are buying chickens now.
And we thought, if we didn't have dogs, we'd probably have chickens.
Yeah.
Our dogs, we had chickens before.
Yeah.
And our dogs killed them. So we're like,
you gotta look into quail, dude. I have quail too, which quail are a lot of fun. And they stay, you put quail in more confiscated, or not confiscated, compact cages. Cause they like being more compact. Like, they don't like a chicken coop or open free range. They don't like, they won't lay eggs cause they don't feel comfortable. Cause like in the wild, quail typically hide under bushes. They don't like to be like out roaming around like a turkey or something. So they like being like more confined. So they lay more eggs. So like, that's why a lot of quail farmers and stuff, they'll even have them like in their garages and stuff with stackable cages. At first I thought it was like kind of cruel, but then like I had them in like a chicken coop run area, and they were like stressed out. They'd always like hide in corners and they never laid eggs. And I was like, this is not right. So then I actually have mine in like a rabbit hutch type thing. But it's cool, cause like with dogs and stuff, you don't have to worry about them, cause they're in a fully enclosed cage, and you still get eggs, and they take up a lot less space too. So if you are looking into, like, if you want eggs and stuff, the only thing that stinks is you do have to have, it's like 3 quail eggs per 1 chicken egg if you like use it for recipes. So I'll eat a dozen quail eggs, but you know, like for breakfast, exactly, because it's like 3 or 4 chicken eggs. It's not that, it's really not that many eggs when you break it down that way. But what also is cool though too is like I have probably 50 to 60 quail right now, and they take up as much space as like 1 chicken. So I can get like 40, you know, and they'll lay an egg a day. So I can get, right now I probably get like, they're still not fully laying because of the temperature is still pretty cold. But when they all start laying, I'll get like 30 to 40 eggs a day out of like 50 or 60 quail. And that's, you know, and like I said, it's like a tiny little spot. It's just like a rabbit hutch basically that they're in, and they love it. They lay an egg a day, and you can also end up using them for meat too. I haven't personally used them for meat because mine are just, they're regular Courtenay quail, so they're kind of small, so I kind of feel like there's not a lot, like it's not worth it. a lot of guys will eat, what they do is they'll like, because you hatch, they're really easy to hatch out yourself too, so a lot of guys when they hatch them out, they'll just eat the roosters. So then they keep the hens for the egg production. But, which I don't know, I might do that if I get a lot of roosters again this year, cause I normally hatch them out every year. But yeah, I think that this whole thing, this pandemic thing that we're going through right now, is a huge learning curve for a lot of people. And like I said, I hope that it turns a lot of people into this. That's why I was kind of bummed that they're closing a lot of this stuff for fishing, because it's like, for two reasons. One, I think that people should be going out. I mean, you know, like if you worked in a confined area and then like your work gets shut down or your kids going to school, it's like, what, you can't lock kids up for a month and not expect people to start getting they're going to start getting sick on their own. You know, like, I mean, like me personally, you lock me in the house for a month, I'm going to be sick with something. It might not be the coronavirus, but I'll be sick with something after being locked in the house that long. And then the other thing is too, like I said, like, I feel like you're a lot less, you know, a lot less, vulnerable when you're outdoors, you know, like, I feel like you're getting your, you know, your vitamin D from the sun, you're out getting fresh air. You're, if you're near the ocean, you're getting salt air, which kills a lot of stuff too. You know, like, there's, I don't know, my argument side of it is like, I feel like them shutting down outdoor activity things is wrong in the way that, like, I feel like people should be leaning towards that because it's a healthier alternative from just sitting in your house. Yeah, if that makes sense. And that's my personal opinion. And it really depends on where people are going to. Like, you look at those beaches in LA when they closed all the beaches in LA, it's like, okay, that's definitely not healthy. Like, I mean, when you're tripping on people to walk to the water, you definitely shouldn't be hanging out there. That's no different than going to Disneyland and something like this, you know? Like, but, you know, like, our Ventura County beaches, they don't ever get that packed. Like, they get packed, but, like, you know, if you're within, you know, 50 feet of somebody, you should probably move down the beach a little bit. You know, like, you know, everyone kind of likes their own space where we live at. It's not...
Well, I think Ventura County responded because they were afraid that people from L.A., would now travel to Ventura County.
Yeah.
Their beaches were closed. And to be honest, I saw some of that last Saturday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it definitely does. One of my uncle's a big surfer, and he was saying that, like, the surfing, he's been posting a whole bunch of stuff about that because he was saying that that's why they closed down a lot of the beaches here, is because they were getting so many, like, an influx of surfers that came up.
Yeah, because, no, that was happening in the harbor, too. And we went out last Saturday and we were like on the fence, like, is this going to be okay? You know, that was right when they started saying that beaches at the harbor were closed. So we woke up like 4 a.m. and we dropped off our gear about 4:30 a.m. And then we went and we parked our car in the neighborhood so that it was incognito.
Yeah.
So anyways, we come back after fishing and it's about 8:30 a.m, you know. We basically have been doing this get them and come in strategy, so we don't go out and fish like we used to fish till noon.
Yeah.
You know? Now we're like, you know what, just get what we want, come in and call it a day. We come around the break wall about 8:00 and there's a bunch of people like kayaking and stuff. We're like, wow, this is more than there usually is.
Yeah.
And so we go up to, you know, unload our gear or you know, load our gear on our trucks and stuff. And we're on the beach. And so I looked at a couple of the cars and I looked at the license plates. And of course they had dealership license plate frames, and the dealership license plate frames were not even from around here.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, these people aren't even from here. You know, like, it didn't say Ventura, Toyota. It didn't, you know, it was all from out of town.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, you know, here, me and my friend are going through all these precautions to make it look, you know, incognito and not draw attention to ourselves. And then the people that are coming from out of town are just, you know, hey, we'll just park 5 cars right here in the place where you're not really supposed to park anyways.
Yeah.
And we'll draw a bunch of attention to ourselves. And it was sort of like, okay, man, this is, you know, now I started to feel a little bit of localism in fishing, and I've never felt that. Like, growing up surfing, I felt that way. But in fishing, I never felt that way, but I started to feel that about fishing, and it was sort of like...
Yeah, just my spot, yeah.
I've been secretive of my spots. I don't share them.
Yeah.
But since if I saw somebody fishing, I didn't want to, like, kick their butt.
Yeah.
But,
But now you're like, yeah, definitely. And, you know, like, I think they had the same problem at, you know, cause like Lake Casitas, they closed last week too. And they actually closed Lake Casitas two weeks ago, for vehicle entry. But then what they did was they're like, oh, we'll let you guys come in, but you either have to ride a bike or walk in. Well, then that following weekend that they did that, that was like on a Wednesday or a Thursday, I think. That weekend, they had so many people that came in that they were like, oh my gosh, like, this is ridiculous, because, like you're saying, like, they, you know, they closed so many other options that, like, what are you going to do? Oh, let's go for a bike ride at the lake. You know, like, it was like all of a sudden it was like, you know, people were like, oh, there's something we can do. So then they just went and they flooded it. And then it was like these people that, you know, were going, you know, they're like, I know some guys that fish the lake almost every day, and they got kicked out of fishing on their boats. So they're like, okay, well, we'll go walk the shoreline. So they walked the shoreline for a couple of days. And then on that weekend, they were like, the shoreline was so packed that, like, we didn't even want to fish there. You know, like, they were like, we left because it was too full of people. And I think that's kind of, you're probably the same thing you were feeling there at the beach, was it was just like, this isn't right. This isn't the way the spot's supposed to be, you know? And this is my spot. This is my home, my home fishing grounds. You know, you guys are just going to raid it.
None of those guys were fishing next to me. They were fishing in the wrong spots, but it's
all right. Yeah, right? It's like, yeah, you guys fishing over there. Just don't get it shut down for the rest of us, you know?
Yeah, but exactly. It was more or less the attention they're drawing to the sport, the attention they're drawing to the fact that they're grouping up, you know, a bunch of cars, and a parking lot looks like a group, you know? And so it's interpreted differently, and so it's...
It's crazy times, man. I was watching the, I don't know if you follow any fly fishing stuff, but my dad's got a cabin up by Kern River, kind of, by Lake Isabella. So, like, there's the Kern River fly shop up there, and I follow that. Yeah. Yeah, so I follow that guy. Do you follow him on Instagram?
Yes, I do.
Did you see his post about all the non-local people there?
Yeah, they all showed up to his shop, and he's like,
yeah, he's like, no, I'm not going to serve, like, I'm not going to open for you guys, sorry, like, you guys got to get out of here, because I was just talking to my dad about this, actually, yesterday, and he was telling me that, like, there hasn't been any cases in that whole valley, so they, like, they're trying to, like, not get people to come visit, because, like, there's no virus up there, and there's a lot of elderly people that live in that, like, Lake Isabella area. There's a lot of retirement community up there. So they're like, yeah, don't bring it here. Like, we don't have it yet. We don't need it. Like, you know, if it's going to come here, it's going to start wiping out a lot of the elderly community. And the whole reason why it would come here is from people, you know, from tourism coming in. So they're trying to not get people to come up. Because I was talking to my dad. I was like, yeah, I was thinking it'd be kind of nice to go up to the cabin because everything's just so crazy down here, you know? And my dad's like, yeah. He's like, I'm kind of back and forth about it because, like, I want to go. But then at the same time, like, I don't really want to travel, like, if I am carrying it to take it up there. And I was like, yeah, I guess it just depends on what you plan on doing there, though, too. Because, like, when I go to my dad's cabin, I might go to the gas station. But other than that, like, I pretty much am at the cabin. And, like, I'll make my own food there. And then I go out fishing or hiking or something, you know, like, I don't go to, like, populated areas, and everything's shut down right now up there anyways, you know.
Right.
But yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. I went on a hunting trip 2 weeks ago, and we were worried because we went to Arizona, in Kingman, Arizona, on a pig hunt. And when we went out there, me and my brother were kind of nervous because we got on the day that we were driving out there, the ranch owner, he told my cousin and my grandpa that were already out there that there was a big possibility they were talking about shutting down the state lines, the state borders. And we were like, crap. Like, we were, like, literally about to cross over the state line. And they're like, yeah, you guys might not be able to cross over. And if you do cross over, they might be closing it, so you're not going to be able to get back in California. And I was like, that's kind of a weird feeling. Like, I was like, I don't even know if I want to go over the state line if they're going to be closing it right behind us, you know. But they didn't end up that night. The president went on and said that they're not doing any of the state line shutdowns because it's just going to mess up a lot of stuff. So, like, luckily we were able to get back. But like kind of a weird thing. And like I said, like you said earlier, it's like nobody's ever experienced anything like I've never been told that we were gonna not be able to travel whatsoever. That's so weird to me. That's so weird. I mean, I can understand like not traveling to other countries, but like traveling within the states or within the counties, like we live in a free country, you know, like you're normally able to go, like we were raised in this, that you could go wherever you could afford to go. You know, if you could afford to go far, you could afford to go far. If you can't, then you stayed local. But like, you know, if you worked hard and you wanted to go somewhere else to go hang out and be outdoors, that's one of the things that, like, I mean, luckily in California, we don't have to go far for a lot of stuff, you know, but all right, man. Well, was there anything, I was going to mention too, like, I was trying to think of how did we first meet? I met you. I'm trying to think.
Was it
through?
That's gonna be a tricky question, man.
Because we've talked a lot and stuff on social media, but I feel like it was it something with, did you? Because you used to do stuff with Kevin Brannon, right? Or
yeah,
no?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if it was with Kevin or it might have been even with Chasing Tail. Did you do?
Chasing Tail too. Yeah, I've done some stuff with Santiago and stuff. Yeah.
Because I think maybe that's what it was. I think it was with Santiago, like earlier on, like a long time ago. I think now, but yeah,
I want to say like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, when I first met you, and then I can't really. Pin the tail on the
was barbecue. It at the barbecue? I wonder if it was like at the Chasing Tail barbecue.
It,
where you?
It might have been. Yeah,
it
might have been
that. And, yeah, it was either that or because I've seen you too at Mission Fish things.
Yeah.
And that's another cool. So you do most of the, you do a lot of the promotional stuff for Mission Fish too,
yeah,
right?
I do a lot of photography and videography and manage a website. Of course, some graphic design.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good organization. I'm happy to be part of it, you know?
Yeah. I'm actually, because I messaged a few different people that I'm going to try to get on the podcast, and that's one of the guys. Me and Brian have already talked about it a couple different times, but we're trying to, like, narrow down a time and actually record it. And a lot of the times, like, that's one of the cool parts about, like, you, I think, because you're doing, like, the bartending and stuff, like, I think that you kind of have a little bit more of a night. Like, a lot of people, they're like, oh, I'm in bed by 7 or 8, and I'm like, what? Like, like to me, I like to, like I said, it works out really good for me to record later at night, just because my household's quiet. Like, even, I did one during the day, and it was my chicken roosters were, like, going off in the background and stuff, and I was like, dang it, like, I can't get anywhere in the house where I can't hear a rooster. And, like, it was funny because when I played it back later on, I was like, man, those things are really loud. I never really noticed it until you're just listening to the sound, like, on a recording or something. But yeah, so, like, me scheduling with a lot of people, sometimes it's hard for me to get people on here because, just, like, our times and stuff don't line out. But I think hopefully I'll be getting Brian on here pretty soon, and he can talk a little bit more about, Mission Fish, because I've talked about it on here a little bit, but I, you know, it was really funny too, is I was actually wearing, did you do the design for the surf fishing? So I was wearing that shirt today at a job, and, or like I was going and measuring, some stuff for a job, and the homeowner's like, hey, you, he's like, hey, you know Mission Fish? And I was like, yeah. I was like, I do like some volunteer stuff for him and whatnot. And he's like, oh yeah. He's like, so you know Brian? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, yeah. He's like, I fish with Brian all the time and I talk to him. He's like, I talk to him like almost like daily. And I was like, oh, that is so crazy. Like I never met this guy before in my life. And then like it's a small fishing community. It's funny. Because then, like, he started, like, you know, talking about a whole bunch of other people that we all know, you know? And I was like, that is super random. Like, and I was all, like, we probably wouldn't have even made the connection except for the fact that I was wearing that shirt that you designed. But I gotta get some more of those from Brian too, because I like that surf fishing one was a really cool logo or design on the back was sweet. But
Yeah.
So I gotta get some more of those because I love representing it. But like I had a couple of the white ones, and white shirts just don't like whenever there's a white shirt that has print on it. If it's a plain white shirt, it seems like it'll last me forever. But as soon as I get something with a logo on it, I stain the crud out of it. And I don't know why. The very first one I got blood all over it. The fishing trip that he gave it to me. I can't remember what it was, but they hooked something and it bled out and it's like flopped around and sprayed. So I have like brown spots all down the front of the shirt. And I was like, what the heck?
That was poop, Tyler. That was poop.
Oh yeah, yeah. I just dribbled a little bit of poop down the front of my belly. No, but the black ones worked out pretty good. I haven't stained that one yet. But all right, man. Well, was there anything else that you wanted to talk about or cover? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was. I mean, went over a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
that was good.
Yeah. No. Well. Yeah, man. So we'll. I'll probably try to get you on here again eventually after we do some more fishing together or something. Like I said, a lot of the first times that I'm having people on here, it's more of just like a interview thing, but later on, maybe I'll get you on here and we can talk about different projects, maybe even a joint one with Brian or something. We can talk about stuff that you're doing with Mission Fish or something like that too. So, or maybe even get into more, details and stuff on kayak fishing if I ever actually make it out there and try it.
Yeah, it's definitely a different a sport than boat fishing.
Yeah,
you know, it's definitely takes a lot more out of you to do it. I think that's my draw too towards it, is that it is a physical sport, you know.
Yeah, even the difference between charter boat fishing and private boat fishing in the ocean is a huge difference too. Like,
for sure.
My friends that do private boat fishing, they like driving boats. I like fishing. So, I don't know. It's a lot of work to own a private boat. It's not like you just buy the boat and then you catch fish. Like, you got to do a lot of work. There's a lot more to it. And especially, like, with you with the kayak, too, it's the same thing. Like, you guys got to do a lot more homework versus, like, when I go out ocean fishing, it's like, okay, we're here. And then it's like, all right, let me try this. Yeah. Let me try this. You know, it's more of just like my fishing techniques. It's not like I got to find the fish, you know? So you guys are almost hunting and fishing at the same time. You got to hunt for the spots and then you got to fish for the fish, you know, because you can be a good fisherman, but if you can't find the fish, you ain't going to be a good fisherman. So, all right, man, well, I'll let you get to bed and stuff. I know it's getting late, so. But thank you for coming on on my podcast, and we'll try to get you on here again at some point, and hopefully we'll get to go fishing again soon.
For sure.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tyler. Thanks for having me. And I'm just hoping we get back to that normal soon. And everybody else get out there and catch some fish.
Yeah. Hey, and I forgot to mention too. So like anybody that's got any of my Cali Outdoorsman hats, Ricardo's the one him and his wife are the ones that do the hats and stuff for me now. So just, if anybody needs hats made or anything, you gotta hit up Ricardo.
Yeah.
So
yep, hit up my wife.
She, or your wife. Yeah. She does all the embroidery stuff. So, yeah. All right, man. Well, I'll let you go, and, hopefully you have a good night. And, like I said, have fun fishing out there. I know you get out there a lot more than me.
just because of the circumstances.
Yeah. Know? Yep. All right, man. I'll talk to you later. Thanks again.
All right.
Okay. Bye. So, thank you guys for tuning in. And like I said, that was Ricardo Holden. He's on Instagram and Facebook too. And like I said, he does do, him and his wife do the Cali Outdoorsman hats for me. They do an awesome job. They're very picky and meticulous. Like, I actually... If you do follow him, you've seen he's got a couple of my hats, and actually the reason why he had kept some of the hats was because they weren't high enough quality standard to give to me. So like he kept a couple of them that had a little bit of flaws or whatever. And I told him, I was like, man, I was like, I'm all for you guys supporting me. And I appreciate, you know, the good quality work. So, but yeah, so they make great hats, and, his wife does a lot more of different embroidery stuff. And then Ricardo also does, like he mentioned, he does web design, web management, and then he does graphic design, and like he does a lot of the stuff for Mission Fish, the logos. I want to say, actually, I think that the way that I first met him was actually for, if you guys follow Chasing Tail Fishing Crew, I believe he came up with some of the designs or logos for the shirts. The first set of them, I'm not sure about some of the newer designs. But he's a really good, if you guys are looking for hunting and fishing, or mainly fishing, you know, people with a background in fishing for graphic design or any types of design and stuff like that. He's really good with that stuff. So, so you guys can look him up again. His name is Ricardo Holden. And if you guys have questions and stuff with kayak fishing, he's a really good, he actually works, with the Kayak Center in Channel Islands. I forgot to touch bases with that too. Maybe next time I have him on here, we can talk about that a little bit more. But he does like the last time I was talking to him, he was telling me they do like a demo thing to where you can try it before you buy it with the Hobie kayaks, and you pay kind of basically like a rental fee, and he takes you out almost as like a fishing guide, and shows you kind of how to fish from your kayak. And then if you decide to buy it, they take that fee that you paid in the beginning and they put it towards buying a new kayak. So that's a really cool thing if you guys are interested in that. I definitely want to go out and try it. I just, with having all my kids and stuff, it's been quite a bit to go out and do a lot of the things that I want to try. But it is something that I personally really want to try soon. Especially with the Hobie kayaks, because they're a lot more comfortable, and they have, like I mentioned earlier, I have had a problem with trying to kayak, because I had a back surgery. It's been quite a few years now, but, I have a hard time sitting with my legs at a complete 90. It just pulls on my lower back really bad. So they have, Hobie has kayaks that actually have like kind of a lift, like a seat inside of them that actually sit up higher. So I've been wanting to really try one of those, and then also try one with the pedals, because I've only tried kayaks with, like the oars or the paddles, and they're, it also just puts more strain on my back, like on my lower back. So I want to try those out. I've talked to Ricardo, and hopefully I'll get out there soon and actually give it a shot. But, if you guys are interested in that, like I said, he works with the, I want to say it's the Channel Islands Kayak Center. But like I said, you can message him and stuff on Instagram or Facebook if you want to reach out to him and see about trying out a Hobie kayak. Or if you have questions about kayak fishing and stuff, he's very knowledgeable on that stuff. He did some seminars. I think he's done them a couple years now for Hobie down at the Fred Hall Fishing Show. On kayak fishing. So like I said, he's a great guy, super knowledgeable with kayak fishing. So if you guys have questions, I highly recommend you reach out to him, and you know, and hopefully he can point you guys in the right direction and stuff. But anyways, that's gonna be a conclusion to this podcast, and I apologize that I haven't been recording a lot. I've had a lot of stuff going on in my personal life, with, like we kind of talked about on this podcast, with the whole coronavirus pandemic thing going on in the world right now. You know, like today's, just so you guys know, today is Tuesday, April 7th in 2020, and it's been going on for, I believe, 3 weeks now. But they've been doing a lot of closures and stuff for anybody that's not aware of it. I'm pretty sure everyone's aware of it now, but we're supposed to be social distancing, not coming in contact with other people as much as possible. So it's just changing a lot in the way we live our lives, like me and Ricardo were talking about. So, but I'm hoping to actually start trying to get a few more podcasts on here. I reached out to a few different people. So if you guys want to, you know, subscribe to my podcast, that'd be awesome. And I really want to try to do it on a regular basis, but, at this point in my life right now, I've got a lot going on with my career and stuff. So, I apologize if it's inconsistent, but I will be trying to put out as much content for you guys as possible. So, I appreciate you guys listening in, and, hopefully I didn't bore you guys too much, and, look forward to, the next time. All right. Thanks again for listening to the Cali Outdoorsman podcast.